Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com.
Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Networks on Saturday, October 24th, 2015. This is episode 1231. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Slack, a messaging app for teams. Slack makes your work life simpler, more pleasant, more productive. I even use it at home. To try it for free and get $100 credit toward a paid plan, go to slack.com/techguy. And by Gazelle, the online marketplace for buying and selling used gadgets. Shop from a variety of certified pre-owned electronics or trade one in for cash. Give new life to a used device. Visit gazelle.com today. And by Epson's new EcoTank printers. With Epson's line of SuperTank all-in-one printers, you could print thousands of documents without running out of ink. EcoTank is loaded and ready to print when you are. Visit Epson.com/EcoTank to find out more. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk about computers and the internet and home theater and digital photography, smartphones, smartwatches, and all that jazz. 888-ASK-LEO is the phone number. 888-827-5536. That's toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada or even Media Pennsylvania. Anywhere in between. 888-ASK-LEO. If you're not in those areas, well, then you must use the internet. Skype or something. I just noticed something sneaking up on me. Holy cow. Did you see that? Heather Hammond, Phone Ranger?
I did.
That is a pumpkin carved in my image.
Oh, I thought it was Ronald Reagan.
Well, could be similar. It's the swoopy doopy hair that really gets you. Wow, look at that. Jason Cleanthes, one of our producers, apparently is a master of a Dremel. It's kind of creepy. Thank you, Jason. Wow.
What a suck up.
Well, yeah, no kidding. Halloween's not for a week, you know. Record industry. Let's talk about the record industry. Just saw a news that Pandora, which is right now the number one, I think by far, the number one streaming music company. Beats Spotify, beats Apple Music, beats them all. Do you have a paid Pandora account? Pandora not doing so well. It's a third quarter loss of $85 million. Ooh, ow. $85 million. It was founded 15 years ago. I didn't realize this. Pandora, if you don't know, you probably hear it when you go to the hairdressers. I know my hairdresser listens to Pandora. I'm almost any business these days. Pandora's playing. It's an internet radio station or stations that came out of a very interesting project called the Music DNA Project. The idea was, and Tim Westergren, the founder of Pandora, has explained this to me. Let me see if I can explain it to you. The idea was that musical styles are like strands of DNA. And if there's a musical style you like, if we can categorize it, he felt, if we can categorize it well enough, we could figure out what else you would like. And it's more than just rock, folk, country, classical. It's like singer, songwriter, acoustic, guitar heavy with a 4/4 time signature and a, you know, that kind of thing. The more detailed, the better. And he created this this project. I think he called it the Music Genome Project. And then realized, well, there's no practical use for this. So they started Pandora. But that's how Pandora works. Pandora, if you have an account, free or not, you say, hey, they say, what artist do you like? I like Ry Cooder. And then it will pick other artists that you might like and forms a radio station around it. And you can refine it by saying, you know, thumbs up or thumbs down to songs. You can add additional artists and you eventually create your own station. And it's kind of cool. People like it. And because it's free, you know, I think especially people like it. And they have quite a few users. I think it's something like 90 to 100 million users. Problem is how many paying users. And worse than that, how much it costs them to play the music. Because they do pay the artists billions of dollars a year, despite what the artists may say. I didn't realize this, but Pandora has lost money for many, many years. They're not out of money. They raised quite a bit. According to their financial statements, they have about $440 million left. So at the rate of loss that they're going, they can go a few more quarters. $85 million. Wow. Wow. Costs go up. Revenues of $1.15 billion. I mean, they're making, you know, they're charging money, but they're not keeping it. It's going out to the music industry, which... And this really underscores the fundamental problem with listening to music the way we want to listen to music, which is on Spotify, which is the number two, Pandora. Spotify has 20 million paying users. Apple said we have about 6.5 million paying users. We like this kind of thing because you pay monthly fee around $10 a month. Pandora's a little less, and you don't have to buy music ever again. You just, you know, you listen to whatever you want, unless it's Taylor Swift. She doesn't like this. She says, I don't get paid enough for this. I don't need this stuff. But it really isn't a great business because you, ultimately, the music industry owns you. And they can put you out of business. You live and die by the music industry, which is why Spotify and others have started to branch out to unsigned artists and podcasts like my. I have many podcasts that are on Spotify. Things like that. Stuff the music industry doesn't control. Pandora can't really do that. Pandora is playing the hits. They're playing what you want to play, want to hear. And it turns out this is kind of the problem. Turns out the record industry is stronger than we thought. Turns out the record industry has all these guys right where they want them. Pandora is going to cost them another $90 million because they've agreed to pay the record labels for songs that were older than 1972. Turns out they weren't. And the Turtles, remember? Remember the Turtles? Imagine me and you. I do. I think about you every night. Shouldn't sing, should I? It's only right. Now I have to pay the Turtles. I can't see me. You know that song? The Turtles were mad. Fluorescent Leech and Eddie were mad. Flo and Eddie were mad because they weren't getting royalties for the every time they played that song and others. And that song was number one with a bullet. And so Pandora says, all right, we're going to give the record labels $90 million. And add that to the $85 they lost this quarter. You can see Sirius XM Satellite Radio said, we'll pay $210 million. The record industry still controls this. And you know why? Believe it or not, radio. See, it turns out that we don't want to hear, as a group, you might, but as a group, we don't want to hear new music. We want to hear music we know and like. That's what we want to hear. We want to hear the music we know and like. And how do you get a new record to be a song you know and like? You play it a lot on the radio. People still listen a lot to the radio. And the record industry controls radio to a certain extent. You can't just walk in as an independent guy and say, hey, would you play my song? It just doesn't work that way. So even though I think a lot of us have thought, oh, recording industry's dead, turns out not only is it not dead, but it's in pretty good shape, believe it or not, even though they're not making as much money as they used to. I read, and I'm getting this from a very funny but very profane, I should warn you, blog. I don't. It's Startup L. Jackson. It's startups as if Samuel Jackson were talking about it. So, you know, it's got a lot of curse words in it. Startups and stuff. It's the name of it. And it's great. Apparently, I don't know who he is, but apparently he's a well-known entrepreneur. Everybody knows but me. I was talking to somebody. He said, oh, yeah, you know who that is. I said, no, I don't. And he didn't tell me. Anyway, he's famous. And he's smart because he is saying, it turns out Pandora is an awful business. And it's probably true that Spotify is an awful business. You need the record labels to get scale, and they take all the profits. And it's all because of radio. See? I told you. 8888 Ask Leo. Let's take a break. Your call's next. Ask Macklemore. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Of course, Nathan Staton, musical director, always with just the right cut. It's radio. It's the secret to success. It's funny because everybody I know listens to Spotify and Pandora, a few people, Apple Music. But somebody's listening to the radio because that's still how you break a song. And the record labels pretty much control that. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. Sometime between now and the end of the show, Heather Hammond, I should be receiving. I brought in my super special selfie stick. This is a unique kind of selfie stick.
Uh-oh.
Does that look dangerous? The idea is this is you put this in the studio here, and then I can attach on top of it the thing that I should get before the end of the day, because UPS says they're delivering it. It's the Rico, terrible name, Rico Theta S. And what it is the latest thing. It is a 360-degree camera. So you can shoot stills or movies. And when you're shooting it, you put it on top of this, right? That's why you need a tripod, because you don't want it to move around. And then while you're shooting this, with this thing, everything all around you is being recorded at the same time. It's 360 degrees, see? And that means so I'm going to put it in the studio.
That is great for a dance party.
Yeah, or a radio show. So I'm going to put it in the studio, and I'm going to sit it right here, and then... There we go. And then you can... Now, the problem is watching it. Now, YouTube and Facebook both support these videos through the 360 degrees videos. You could search on both YouTube and Facebook and find it. But what you'll see, if you're just looking on a 2D screen, you can use the mouse to look around. So I'll be on one side, and you'll be on the other side, and they can look behind them. You know, they can rotate around, and they can see the whole studio, and they can see you, and they can see me.
Wow.
And all that at the same time. But then, if you have one of those virtual reality doohickeys that all the kids are talking about these days, a visor, you could use Google's cardboard, which is cheap. You know, it's literally made out of cardboard. In fact, I'm very with it, because the New York Times is going to be distributing these cardboard visors to all of their Sunday Times subscribers tomorrow. Is it tomorrow or next week? I guess it's next week, November 7th, a couple weeks from now. So you take this visor and but you have to have a smartphone. You put your smartphone in the visor and run the Google Cardboard software, and then you look at the video. And now it's like you're in the studio. You can look around, and as you turn your head, the camera turns. Pretty cool, huh?
Fantastic.
No, you're patronizing me now, aren't you?
Well, I still think you should take it to the Halloween party, and then you'll get everyone in their amazing costumes.
Because you want stuff going all around, all around you.
Yeah.
And then you can look around inside. It's supposed to come today. So I got this special tripod, because that you can put anywhere, and then you put the camera on it. See, because you don't want to move the camera, people are going to get really seasick.
Yeah.
So you put the camera on that, and then people can actually come to the studio and look around. But on YouTube or Facebook. Isn't that cool?
Oh, I love it. Gosh, you're so excited. You're like out of breath. Please, Mr. Postman, look and see.
So keep an eye on the mailbox.
360 camera for me.
Because I'm supposed to get that today. This I pre-ordered it ages ago. Rico Theta S. I'll let you know. You know, they're not that expensive. It's a few hundred bucks, I think.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And it takes, so you can take still, it looks silly. It looks like a little, just a tiny little, you know, candy bar thing. You could take still pictures with it that are 360 degrees. So then people could want, you know, look around in the still. But the video is what interests me. The idea of putting that on Facebook or YouTube. I'll put it on Facebook.
Oh, I'm excited.
Facebook.com/ Leo G. Laporte, or I think the Leo Laporte is the business page. And I could put the videos up there. So if you're following me, those are public pages, and I will.
Always something new and amazing.
Always something amazing in the world of technology. That's why I love it. Because I am, like a lot of those of us in the technology world, I'm very ADD. I need constant constant stimulation.
Gimme.
Yeah, right. What? Oh, squirrel.
Radio show.
Sorry. I got distracted. So you have been lining up, Heather Hammond, the phone ranger. You have been lining up people all morning, well, at least since the last 10 minutes, who have been calling, asking questions. And I think you've picked six wonderful people to put on the air here. But I need to know who to start with.
Yeah, well, sometimes technology isn't totally amazing. And that's why we need to talk to Mike in Riverside.
Oh, is he not amazed at the moment? Let's find out. Line two. I pressed it. Ah, there we go. Hi, Mike. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo. How you doing? I hope you're doing better than I am.
Oh, no. What's the matter, Mike?
I've got an HP Pavilion G Series laptop, about 3 years old.
Okay.
And I turned it on yesterday morning. It was working fine the night before.
Uh-oh.
And the screen is black.
Whoa.
I can hear the hard drive kick up. The fans are working. And I do not want to take it into the Geek Squad and make it worse. So I'm calling the guru of everything.
Well, so there are a couple of things that could go wrong. It could be just the screen is a problem, or the ribbon connector that connects the screen. Laptops, often that's a problem. Or it could be something more serious. Do you feel like it's booting up and you just can't see it?
Well, it sounds like it, and I went online with another computer, and I did a couple things that HP suggested.
I hooked it up
to an external monitor.
That was what I was going to suggest, because if the video card's still working, but the monitor or the ribbon cable connecting it are bad, then an external monitor should work. And you still don't see anything?
I've hooked it up to two external monitors, and neither one works.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, that's what I was afraid of.
So that means that it's not, as long as you've pressed the button that says, you know, I'm using an external monitor, but I'm sure the HP instructions told you about that and all that.
Right. Yeah, I did that. And I also took the memory cards out because that was one of the other suggestions.
This is good. They're giving you some good troubleshooting tips. Yeah.
And I've also depowered it, took the battery out, plugged it in to decharge any extra power that might be in there. I've done everything HP said, but yeah. I'm worried that my...
Well, now we know you have a hardware problem, probably.
Yeah.
The video card could be kerplunked. It's not the screen on the laptop, and it's not the ribbon cable connecting the screen, which are two areas of common failure because they take a lot of beating and abuse. But those are fine because the external monitor would show something then. So that means Go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. Let me throw another one out at you.
Yeah.
I'm worried that it might be a heat problem because I had crashes in the last couple months when I'm running videos, and it seems to be pretty hot. So I'm wondering if the video card could be the problem.
Oh, well, could be. Could be. My goodness, we ran out of time fast. I would say that at this point there's no user serviceable parts. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. It's done broke. That's the official diagnosis. It done broke. So I know you don't want to bring it to the Geek Squad. It's still under warranty, though, right? It's a new laptop.
It's about 3 years old.
Just went out of warranty, of course. Yeah. Let me think about this here. What else could you do? Somebody said wrap it in a blanket and get it really hot. The thinking behind this is that you might have something we call a cold solder. Sometimes a joint is improperly soldered and, in fact, only works properly when it's heated up, believe it or not. But I don't think that's it. It sounds like almost certainly it's hard to overheat a computer because they have circuitry that will shut it down before it damages itself. So it's hard to damage it by overheating. But it could be that and it probably does run hot, right? But
it does, and I put it up on a stand that it lets it air out underneath just for that reason.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm almost certain that the video circuitry is dead. The problem with that is on modern laptops, that's not a separate discrete card. It's like your memory was. It's on the motherboard, which means the entire logic board has to be replaced.
Ugh.
Yeah. And replacing the logic board really is as expensive as buying a new computer in most cases.
Well, let me ask this then. I can access the hard drive. Will that hard drive go into a standard external hard drive case?
Yeah, laptop hard drives, some modern SSDs, they're just little daughter boards, but if it's a modern hard drive, laptop hard drive, 2.5-inch, you could take it out, and then you can mount it. In fact, you can buy from Newer Tech and a few other companies for $40 a little bit. Instead of using it, you could buy a USB external container. In fact, I have one in front of me from Drobo, and you could pop it in there. But that's kind of a more permanent solution. You can get from Newer Tech for $39 a connector that will allow you to connect up to the laptop drive and give it the power you need, and then has a USB port on the other side. You wouldn't want to run it that way because you're running the drive out in the open. But for to get data off of it, absolutely.
Well, yeah, I do all my business. I can't do invoicing, right?
Yeah, you're stuck. Yeah.
Yeah, and of course, like everyone, I don't back up enough. Surprise there. I do have an external case that I used in the past, so if it's a standard connection,
Yeah, they are. Well, laptops are different than desktops. They're small and thin, and they get they have different connectors. But if you have the right connectors, it should work, yeah.
Okay, well, at least I can get my data, which is the crucial part.
Right.
Well, bad news and not so bad news, hopefully.
One hopes. Yeah, it does sound like the laptop is dead and probably not worth spending the money to fix it, unfortunately.
Yeah, well, I'm not too fond of HP anyway.
I'm not either. This is not an unusual problem, frankly. I just got the new Microsoft. I just ordered, and it's coming on Monday, the new Microsoft laptop, and I think that's going to be. I'm hoping that's going to be better, although some reviewers are also reporting problems with that, so we'll see.
Is that the Surface?
The Surface Book.
Okay.
Yeah, but that's expensive. I would look at Lenovo or Dell. I think Dell's very reliable.
Yeah, I've heard you say that in the past.
Yeah, I really. And they have good support, especially if you buy the gold support, the extra money support. What all these companies have done is unbundled support, so your free support's terrible.
Yeah, I found that out.
Yeah, and so only the paid support really knows what they're doing. They're what support used to be in the old days.
Yeah. So. Do you recommend getting a Dell just for buying it online?
Yeah. I've been really happy with Dell's. I have this Dell 13-inch. The XPS 13 is fabulous. Just great. Nice laptop.
Okay. All right. Well, that's where I have to go then. First, I'll get the hard drive out, and I'll decide on the computer.
Great. Nice to talk to you, Mike.
Okay. Thank you very much, Leo.
Take care. Bye-bye. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. There he is, Scotty Wilkinson, the home theater guru, who's sitting next to my pumpkin.
Great-looking pumpkin, man.
You think that looks like me?
Not 100%, but it's definitely suggestive.
I think it looks like the Joker. I'm terrified.
Now, the Cesar Romero Joker?
Yeah, like the Cesar Romero Joker. Maybe a little Heath Ledger in there.
The Heath Ledger
in there. No, but to all credit to Jason Klanthus Effendon, who did this, because to do an image of me in a pumpkin with a Dremel tool is not easy.
Oh, no, it's beautifully done. It's just gorgeous.
He's amazing.
Yeah, yeah.
So, hello, Scott Wilkinson, home theater guru. By the way, I talked to Mike off the air, and we decided after a little more diagnostic time, the last call, that he, in fact, did have a bad video board, and he's got...
Doggone it. I have an HP Pavilion myself, laptop, and I haven't used it in a few years. It's older than 3 years. It didn't cause me any problem, fortunately.
Well, you were lucky.
I was, I guess, yeah.
Or he was unlucky. Something went wrong.
Somebody, yeah. I now have a Dell for calibration. I use it for calibration because the calibration software that I use runs on Windows.
Yeah, he's going to get a new one. I said, yeah, I've had great results with Dell.
Mm-hmm.
I love Lenovo. I'm hesitant to recommend them because they've been pulling shenanigans with their software of late.
What?
Yeah. A little spyware stuff going on.
Oh, man.
Man. You can't win. So I'm saying Dell. So yeah. Scotty comes every week to talk about a home theater, speakers, surround sound, big screens, all that stuff, all the toys that we love
cool stuff, man.
Did you hear me talking about the 360 camera?
Oh, man, can't wait to see that. That's going to be awesome.
It won't be 4K. But next, you know, it's HD now. It is 1080p, and I think it's going to get better and better. And I'm really intrigued by the future of this. You've probably seen these virtual reality.
Oh, sure.
In fact, as I mentioned, the New York Times, in November 7th, the Sunday Times is going to come with Google Cardboard, which is basically you assemble it yourself. It's cardboard. You fold it.
Yeah.
And then you put your – you need a smartphone, a late model smartphone like an iPhone or a Samsung or something like that. And and they have a 3D, 360-degree immersive video. I think it's of refugees. I can't remember what it is, but it's a news story that they're going to offer, which is amazing.
It is amazing. And we've been in the movie industry. There's a lot of talk about virtual reality and augmented reality and how movie creators, producers and directors are going to present movies in virtual reality. And it's a very tricky problem.
Yeah.
Because normally, you know, they direct your attention to the screen and they give you what they want you to see. But if you have a 360-degree virtual reality kind of movie, you can look behind you, you can look around. You won't necessarily be looking at the place where they want you to look. So how are they going to do that? I don't know. We're in such an infant state in that regard. But of course, with video games, it makes total sense.
Yeah, I mean, you know, remember, there have been lots of these attempts to make movies more immersive. Mm-hmm. And, of course, 3D was the horrible. This is not. This is probably similar to 3D. You don't want to be craning your neck around looking to see what's going
on. Well, that's true. Yeah, exactly right.
But at the same – so it's a little gimmicky. But at the same time, if you could go somewhere where something interesting – for instance, one of the demos that they give with the Samsung Gear VR is Cirque du Soleil.
And that would be awesome.
And you're in the middle of the circus. Yeah. So you're looking at a performer who's in front of you. But if you turn to the left, there's a performer performing for you, looking straight at you on the left, on the right. You turn around behind you. The sound seems to be coming from all around you. And as you – and then so – you can. It's like a three-ring circus, only it's all 360 degrees. It's kind of there are some use cases for it.
It's true, but you bring up the sound, and that's a very interesting part of this puzzle, because unless you have some sort of head tracker,
right,
then as you move your head, the sound comes with you. So if you heard something on your right and you move 90 degrees, it's still on your right. It should be behind
you. Yeah.
But it's still on your right. So it's like, when you're watching it, doing this in a home theater kind of situation, it's like your whole speaker system moved with you as you move around. And that is unless you have a head tracking system. And that means you need a little something on your headphones or your VR gear.
It knows you're moving because it's just a question of software because it's tracking your movement.
It is. You're right. No, you're right.
So
you're
it knows exactly you've turned to the left. It's just a question of the software doing it. I think some software does.
Well, but it's pretty processor intensive.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons this is happening. And the Gear VR, by the way, Samsung's announced is going to cost $99 for the headset. And then if you have a late model Samsung phone, a Note 5, a Note 4, S6, you just slot it in there. But the reason this all can happen is because you already spent $1,000 on a very, very fancy computer that fits right in the headset, right?
Called your phone.
Your smartphone. I don't know. Yeah. I think this is really going to be interesting. It is.
I've seen it's Oculus gimmicky. Rift, and it did not impress me.
Yeah.
It was just not that great. I mean, I looked around, and the image was not, you know, super crisp and clear. I could see the pixels, And the response time was not immediate. It was, you know, you could see that it was a slight delay.
Yeah.
So, who knows?
I have to say, in general, I like the idea that the movie is being conducted by a storyteller who is drawing you along through a journey. Mm-hmm. And every time they've made it so that you, you know, build your own adventure, it's always, mm-hmm. you want the storyteller to lead you through it. Now,
that's right.
Let's talk about what everybody is so excited about. Monday Night Football, they showed the new Star Wars trailer, and then they released it everywhere.
Oh, yeah.
I bought tickets, because tickets, believe it or not, are already on sale for December 17th.
Yep.
And I was lucky, because they added a show. It's like a rock concert. They added a show in my local theater.
Oh, man.
I'm going to see it in 3D. Now, is it going to be in HDR? How do you recommend we see the new Star Wars?
That's a great question. A lot of people ask me if it's going to be in HDR, and the answer is I don't know yet. It has not been announced, at least from Dolby. I assume it's going to be, if it comes out in HDR in the theater, it'll be Dolby Vision.
I'm seeing it in Dolby Vision Dolby Vision 3D.
Well,
so then that means that if they did a deal with Dolby, that maybe the HDR theaters will have the HDR version, right?
Well, yeah, Dolby Vision is only available in HDR theaters, of which there are only 8 in the country. Oh. So you're not,
seeing
in Dolby Vision. Oh. You are seeing it in 3D, probably.
Yeah.
And I suspect that'll be pretty damn good. Personally, I'd be happy to see it in 3D.
And there is IMAX, right?
I imagine.
I think so.
I don't know for sure. But yeah, then that'll be 3D as well. And, you know, I'll be very happy to go see it in 3D. And I would go see it in an IMAX probably in 3D if I could, because that'll be brighter. 3D in a normal theater is going to be pretty dim.
But yes.
IMAX will be brighter because they use two projectors.
But isn't... okay. It's brighter, but isn't it lower resolution? I mean...
No.
They're
both going to be 4K.
Okay.
They're both going to... If they release this in 2K... instead of 4K, at least in the theaters that can accommodate it, then I'll be extremely surprised. It's really going to be this is a tentpole piece, as they say. It's really super anticipated, and I'm sure they're going to give it the best treatment they can. I hope it's in HDR, but I have not heard anything about that yet. I mean, that would be the way to see it if it is. If you're near one of those 8 Dolby Cinema theaters
around the
country. Advanced
ticket sales for The Force Awakens and IMAX, $6 million, mostly, get this, older men. Like you and me? Yeah. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. The AMC IMAX website says laser coming soon.
Hey, everybody in the chat room. Drew is saying, I think I heard they shot it, Star Wars, on film. That might be... I think J.J. Abrams is among the filmmakers or movie makers that still like to shoot on film. There are a few. Quentin Tarantino, I think, is another one. I'd be a little surprised, because maybe not. I mean, it's hard to say. George Lucas always embraced the latest technology. So that feels maybe like a step backwards for the franchise. But J.J. Abrams has got enough clout to do whatever the heck he wants. So, if he wanted to do it on film, he would. Certainly when they digitize it to deliver to theaters, and now over 90% of theaters in the U.S. are digital, they should easily be able to do that in 4K and in high dynamic range. It should be able to grade it in high dynamic range. So I sure as heck hope they do. Hey, Rusty Bones, good to see you. User 7433, who has the better 4K TV, Samsung or Vizio? Good question. Vizio has got some great, great 4K TVs, no question. The M series is wonderful. The reference series, which I just saw again at Cedia, fantastic, beautiful. And the M series is great value for the money. The reference series, I'm not so sure. I mean, yeah, it's beautiful. It's gorgeous. But the 65-inch is $6,000. And the 65-inch LG OLED is $5,000. So it's less expensive for an OLED than it is for a backlit LCD TV. Now, the Vizio Reference has 384 zones, uses quantum dots to get out to a very wide color gamut. And it's much brighter than the OLED. The LG OLED can only get to about 300 nits, I think, and the Vizio is rated at 800. And I think somebody recently reviewed it. I forget who it was, and measured it and said it was 650 nits. Okay. Still, that's a lot. It's a lot more than the OLED. So for high dynamic range, the Vizio might be a better choice. The OLED, the LG OLEDs can do high dynamic range now as well. And we saw that at Cydia, and they looked really, really good. let's see. James, VA3JPX. Oh, and I've only got 40 seconds left. What are your thoughts on El Cheapo TVs like Westinghouse and others? Generally, I'm not a big fan. They just have too many problems, not good processing. Yeah, it's just not the greatest. And Beatmaster, the advantage of film, you can always rescan the material at even higher resolutions, up to a point. I've heard the theoretical maximum for film is like 6K, maybe 8K. 70 millimeter film, more than that, certainly. But 35 millimeter, that's about the max
resolution. Stick around for the top of the hour.
Happy to do it.
Thank you, Scott. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. It's going to be busy Saturday night, December, what is that, 20th? According to Deadline, Star Wars The Force Awakens, which is coming out Christmas. Remember they had on Monday Night Football, during halftime they showed the new trailer. There are people who have taken the trailer, taken all the previous trailers, edited them into what they think is chronological order in an attempt to figure out what's going on in the movie. I don't want to know. I don't want to know. Don't do that. In fact, now I don't want to see any more trailers. I just want to see the movie. Well, I'm not alone. First day record ticket sales. Remember, this is ticket sales for a movie that opens December 17th. 2 months from now. $6.5 million the first day. According to Deadline, 70% of those buying tickets were males 18 to 49. I don't think you needed Deadline to figure that part out. The average age, 34 years old. Well, think about it. Star Wars, the first Star Wars came out in 77, right? So that was 38 years ago. So these are people who just basically grew up with the movies. That was like their whole childhood was Star Wars. The people who bought, according to Movio, which is apparently a marketing data corporation that tracks this kind of stuff, people who bought advanced tickets are people who spend 2.6 times more in average at the box office than the typical moviegoer. They're the opening night crowd. And then I think it's funny because the other motion picture companies are counter-programming Star Wars with a chick flick and a kid flick. So guys will go to Star Wars, and then their spouses can go see Sisters, the new Tina Fey, Amy Poehler movie. And the kids can go to see Alvin and the Chipmunks, The Road Chip. I'm going to Star Wars. We bought 20 tickets for the staff. John, is that list filled? Do we need to buy more? We may have to buy more. We better buy them soon. They're going to sell out. So, you know, I noticed some people, like Greg, are bringing two and three people with them. The list was empty because it was broken, and now we're using Google Docs to do this. Thank you, John, for setting that up. And now it's suddenly, boom, filled. Everybody wants to see Star Wars. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. On we go to Tom in Cleveland, Georgia. Hi, Tom.
Hey, Leo. How are you doing?
I am well. Welcome to the show.
I see why everybody likes Heather. She is really a sweetheart.
Isn't she nice?
Yeah, she sure is.
Yeah.
We've met a couple times. I was in the Peanut Gallery in one of your Screensavers shows years ago.
Oh, wow.
And matter of fact, you probably remember the show because Megan brought her little baby to the show.
Annabella, who's now a teenager. Yeah, Annabella's a teenager now. It shows you how long that was.
It has been a while.
Yeah.
I've got a 5-year-old Gateway laptop, and I'm running out of hard drive space. It has a 320 gig. I wanted to put a 1 terabyte in it. When I bought the computer, it had Vista, and then with the ability to upgrade to 7 when it came out, and I did that. I don't have disks for either one. I want to install 10 on the new 1 terabyte drive. Is there a way to do it?
Absolutely.
Okay.
So you do get you're due a free upgrade. Anybody with Windows 7, a legit copy, a genuine copy of Windows 7 or 8, gets a free copy of 10.
That's correct.
Microsoft said in their quarterly earnings, which were fabulous this quarter, 110 million people have upgraded already to Windows 10. Most of those freebies, I think. That's okay. Phenomenal. I mean, that is just unheard of. Nothing ever, unprecedented. Nothing ever like that before. Have you received a pop-up saying, would you like Windows 10?
Yeah, I do, but I'm really running out of space on my on my hard drive now. I don't know if I have enough to install it. I guess I could delete some things.
How much space is left?
You know, I don't know right offhand, but it's not much.
Yeah. Well, empty the recycle bin and try to recover some. It won't do it if it can't. But the good news is there are ways to do clean installs of this. You don't have disks for Vista or 7.
That's correct.
Yeah. I'm trying to remember, and my friend Paul Thurrott, who I'm sure has documented this at Thurrott.com, Thurrott.com, has various ways to get what we call a clean install, which is really what you'd like to do, I think.
Right.
In fact, back up your data, all of that stuff, and then wipe the drive and install Windows 10. Let me just...
Okay, because I do have... I do have Carbonite on there, so...
What you can do... I generally don't recommend this. Yeah, good. Carbonite will help you. I'd still have a local backup just because it's faster than trying to download it all.
Okay.
What you can do is get the ISO. That's basically a install disk, and Microsoft right. will let you download that.
Okay.
Who makes the computer?
That's Gateway.
Okay. I would do that. I would download the ISO. Now you will have install media, by the way, for your Windows, which everyone should have. That's a, you know, the fact that you've made it this long without install media for Vista or 7 is just lucky. Because okay. things go wrong.
Right.
And it is time. If you've upgraded from Vista to 7 and now want to go to 10, you really should do a clean install. You don't want any of the little bits of Vista lying around there.
Right, yeah.
So you can go and download from Microsoft. Make sure you get it from Microsoft, the Windows ISO. It won't ask you for serial number or anything.
Okay.
And put that on I would put it on a USB key. Don't put it into a DVD. It'll fit on a 8 gigabyte USB key. You can actually make install media out of it if you'd like.
Okay.
And then I really like the idea of having a fresh install of Windows. The only reason I asked you the brand is there often are drivers and other little bits that are unique to Gateway, in this case, that won't come on that ISO. But you can assume that Windows Update will fix all of those for you. Just it might take a little time.
Okay, yeah.
So I would download the ISO. In theory, the Windows 10 is not registered to you, but to that machine when you do this free upgrade.
Okay.
That's a little different from the way they used to do it.
Right.
Which means that's just so you can't transfer it to another machine. It is that machine's Windows 10 and nobody else's ever. So I believe that in the firmware or the BIOS of your machine, you will have an identifier that Microsoft will use to say, oh, yes. So if you can use that ISO to install on top of it, I would. Because at that point, it will act. And as soon as it's activated, now you can wipe the drive and reinstall.
Okay.
Does that make sense? It activates... associates itself with your machine, and even though that ISO that you downloaded doesn't have a serial number in it, it won't need one because it looks at the machine and says, oh yeah, I remember this machine.
I've been here before.
They keep a database of all that stuff. But I'm going to put in the show notes Paul Thurrott's link on Thurrott.com he calls it Windows 10 Tips Successfully Clean Install Windows 10. And I'll put a link in the show notes at techguylabs.com to that, and you might want to read through that. He has some good tips on there.
Great. Yeah, I'm looking at it today.
Yeah. So. And if you have your Windows 7 key, which I presume you do, or your Windows Vista key, well, you know, you need Windows 7 key. Do you have that key somewhere? Just the number?
Oh, the serial number?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I'd find that on Bellark.
Bellark Advisor could find it for you.
Okay.
If you have that, write it down. Make a copy of that.
Okay.
In worst case, you do a clean install with the ISO, and it'll ask you for that, and you enter that in, and it goes, okay, good, you're golden.
Okay, yeah.
All right.
Good. Well, thank you so much.
Hey, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. 8888 Ask Leo's the phone number. I'm told by Jason, who carved this pumpkin, that he did not use a Dremel tool or any automated means. That was solely done with a knife. Very nice knife work, Jason Clanthus. Very nice. He's a former Navy SEAL. I think he knows how to use a knife.
Yikes.
No, he hates it when I say that. Which I think that's what a Navy SEAL would say.
So I've been having fun in the chat room. Mike Heiss is in there. Good to see you, as always. Compter asked the question, do you know if any 4K HDR content will be coming on streaming? And the answer is yes, it will. In fact, it's here already. We have HDR streaming from MGO on Samsung TVs and presumably LGs as well. That's HDR and 4K. Other places are doing 4K now and will soon do HDR. Vudu, for example, I don't know if they are currently or they are about to start, but it's very soon, if not already. They're going to be streaming Dolby Vision HDR content to the Vizio reference series TVs and others that will do Dolby Vision. But MGO is the HDR, is the SMPTE open standard. I'm pretty sure Netflix has it too, now that I think about it. I'm not sure if they're streaming it quite yet. Ultraflix is another great source of 4K material. Amazon Video will do it as well. It's already here and it's happening. Hey, Robert Bigelow, good to see you. Youper as well. User 7433, when do we think cable will start broadcasting in 4K? That's going to be a while. It's going to be a long while. It's just too bandwidth intensive for cable and satellite. Well, that's not true. Dish Network now has the 4K Joey. So Dish Network has their main DVR, which is called the Hopper. And then they have client devices called Joeys that you can put in different rooms and they can access the content on the Hopper. And at CES, they introduced the 4K Joey, which would allow the Hopper can actually record 4K content, which at the moment is only video on demand from Dish. It's not broadcast, and there's a difference. But it can get video on demand 4K content and then pass that on to the 4K Joey. And I asked, well, is this going to be IP delivered or is it going to be over the satellite? And they said, well, both, sort of. We don't really know. But it's not going to be broadcast. And cable and over-the-air is not going to happen for some time. Over-the-air stuff is being worked out by an organization called ATSC, Advanced Television Systems Committee, which developed HDTV 10 years ago or so. And now they're doing 4K, Ultra HDTV. And they're still working on it diligently, but I don't think it's going to be deployed for, I don't know, a couple years. That's my guess. I could be wrong, but that's my guess. The Mex guy, is the Roku 4 capable of HDR? You know, I don't know. I think not, but I'm not 100% sure. I will have to check and see. When the ink behind your LCD panel comes out of line and the screen gets lines like it were scratched, how can I get it fixed? iPhone 46411. The ink behind your LCD panel comes out of line. I'm not sure I know what you mean by that. There's no ink in an LCD panel. There are color filters. The screen gets lines like it in it as if it were scratched. I'm not sure that would be easy to fix. Depends on if it's a new TV. If it's under warranty, then absolutely get it fixed, or probably most likely they would replace it, the manufacturer. Yeah, getting LCD TVs fixed generally is an iffy proposition. Let's see. Compter and I have been talking about HDR on OLED. And somebody, it might have been Compter, I can't remember now, up earlier in the chat room, was saying, you know, the difference between like a Vizio reference series and an OLED. And one of the main differences is, well, aside from the fact that the Vizio reference uses Dolby Vision HDR and the LG OLEDs use SMPTE, what is commonly called HDR10, which are mutually exclusive. And each of those TVs can't do the other kind, and that's the big problem with HDR these days. But the Vizio is brighter. It can get, they claim, up to 800 nits. I recently saw somebody actually measured it, and it was more like 650. And nits, by the way, is a funny name for the more technical term candelas per square meter. But, you know, that's a mouthful. So I say nits. Anyway, so the Vizio can get brighter. The LG OLED can only get to about 300 nits. Still, that's enough to do high dynamic range, especially when you consider how low the blacks are on OLED. They're essentially zero. And on the Vizio reference, they get pretty darn close, but they're not, I don't think they're probably 100% zero. Now, I haven't measured a Vizio myself yet, but I certainly intend to. So that is the story on that. Compter says, I'll look at the LG OLED to see if it has MGO, as Amazon has very little content in 4K and HDR. Yeah, we're in the early days. We're in the early stages of HDR and even 4K, although that's been around now for a little while. And there are sources for it. Netflix certainly has it. But HDR is, we are really in the early days of that. So, and the MGO thing might be Samsung exclusive at this point, because if I'm not mistaken, somebody in the chat room can correct me if I'm wrong. I believe Samsung owns MGO, or at least a majority stake. So I wouldn't be surprised if they kind of linked those two things together and said, you can only see the HDR content if you own a Samsung HDR TV. User 7433 is still hesitant in buying a 4K TV, and I think rightly so. I still think, with the HDR thing in particular, we're still in the early days. I really fear a format war in HDR between Dolby Vision and HDR10 or the SMPTE standard. As I said earlier, the Vizio reference will accept a Dolby Vision signal, but not HDR10. And the LGs and the Samsungs and Sony now can accept HDR10, but not Dolby Vision. Sony, we're not so sure. So Sony might be the first company to be able to do both, because Sony Pictures has announced they're going to make content in Dolby Vision, high dynamic range. So it would make sense that their TVs would support it as well. Of course, one division of a big giant company talking to another division of a big giant company, especially ones as separated as making the pictures, Sony Pictures, and making the TVs, Sony Electronics. I've seen time and again the problem of those kinds of parts of a company not talking to each other and coming to cross purposes. So I see I've got 48 seconds left. Compter, I hope Oppo comes out with a UHD Blu-ray. I'm sure they will. I imagine we'll see it at CES. That would be the big deal there. MGO is on Roku, Dr. Mom. Don't know about 4K, but you can stream MGO on a Roku.
Just got my new Roku. It has 4K.
Yeah.
I don't have a set for it, but...
Well, that's the next step, isn't it?
It's got voice search, which is nice.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Cool, yes. Man. Well,
Thank you, Scotty.
My pleasure. See you on Halloween.
Halloween. See you later. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers and the internet and home theater and digital photography and all that jazz. 8888-ASK. Leo, that's the phone number. I think I might have confused some people, and I want to make this clear. We were talking to our last caller before the top of the hour about downloading Windows 10. You can download the ISO, which is a big, honking big file, a few gigabyte file that actually is a bootable install disk. So you put it on a USB key. But there are several, and please do not download the so-called Windows Insider ISO. That's a beta version. Please just don't. Okay, just don't get the official release version of Windows 10. We'll put a link in the show notes for that. The Windows Insider build, which somebody in the chat rooms just posted, is not the one you want. That's a test build for people who like to live on the cutting edge. And as somebody who's been using that build, not a good idea. A lot of blue screens, a lot of issues. I am getting the, I'm very excited. I am getting the new Surface Book soon. I think Monday. And now I've been starting to read reviews of it. And unfortunately, Microsoft seeded reviewers, and this is why I don't do this, seeded reviewers with pre-production models. And that's a risky thing for Microsoft to do, and it's turned out to backfire on them because these reviewers are reporting all sorts of issues. Issues that may be gone by the time the release version comes out. It's my policy to only review release products, never to review pre-production products, because I want to review the product that you and I are going to be buying in the store. In fact, most of the time, that's exactly how I get it. I buy it in the store so that I don't have this issue of kind of not knowing, is this real? Because it can go both ways, right? It also could be souped up to make it look better than it is. I want the one that you and I are going to get in a package, in a box, in the store. And that's the one I'll almost always review. Very rarely review. In fact, I can't even think of one I've ever reviewed pre-production versions of anything. Don't like to do that. So I'll give you, now the disadvantage, and in this go-go world, nobody wants to do this. The disadvantage is all the other reviews are already out, but you can't trust them because they're pre-production reviews. So I will get the laptop, the one I bought in the Microsoft store on Monday, and the same kind that you would get, and I will give you a review, but it won't be till next week or the week after. I'll be behind, but I prefer to do it that way, and you're okay with that, right? I think blogs are in such competition. The tech blogs are in such, and even newspapers in the Wall Street Journal, New York Times, such competition to be the first, get the first review out. I saw reviews for the Nexus phones, the new Nexus phones from Google, 2 days after people got the phone. They got it on Friday of last week, and reviews were coming out on Monday. That's not enough time to review a phone. I'm sorry. You just can't. You can say, well, I've had it for a couple of days. Let me tell you what it feels like so far. But that's not a good way to review a phone. You're not going to have a reasonable experience. In fact, phones are especially tough to review. You got to spend time with those guys. I like to make the phone that I'm reviewing for you my regular daily, what they call the daily driver, the one I carry around by itself exclusively for at least a couple of weeks before I can really give you a thorough look. I did just get the new Roku, the Roku 4, set it up 2 nights ago. So I've had it for 2 nights, so it's not a review. This is the one that's going to do 4K video. See, I don't have a 4K set. I bet you don't either. So there's no point in that. And I don't know if streaming 4K is going to look all that good, to be honest. It also has voice search. Everybody's got this now. The new Apple TV, which apparently goes up for pre-order on Monday and starts arriving at the end of the week next week. That also has voice search where you talk to Siri and you say, hey, I want to see all the James Bond movies. Wait a minute, just the ones with Sean Connery or just the ones with Daniel Craig. And she'll know and kind of search across services, which is something that really is nice. The Amazon Fire has had this capability for a while. The Fire TV, but it only searched Amazon at first. And what you really want, don't you, is something that you ask it for a movie, and it will find the movie in all the services. And then it says, well, you can get this on Netflix for free, or you could spend $4.99 and watch it on Vudu. Have you ever done this? I've done it many times. Bought a movie that it turns out was on Netflix for free? That's frustrating. I bought a whole TV series about The Killing. And then I found out I was on Netflix. Free. Already paying Netflix. So we'll have to see. We'll have to see how these cross-service voice searches work. But if they work well, that's going to be huge. I'm looking forward. The Apple TV has two things that I really have wanted. One of which I'm proud to say, and one of which I'm ashamed to say. Actually, both of which are really kind of humiliating. One is, you can say, hey, Siri, what did she just say? Have you ever watched a movie and this happens to me all the time? What? Because have you noticed lately people are mumbling on TV and movies now? I think as I get older, they mumble more. What? And then you have to rewind it. So now you can ask Siri, what did she say? Siri will rewind 50 seconds, put up closed captions for the next 15 seconds so you can see what she just said, you can read what she just said, and then go on without the closed captions. Yay! Right? Yay! And you know what, Heather, you want this, and you're not even old. So it's not just us old folks that want this. Why did she just, hey? You hear in the movie theater, what did she say? Who? My favorite one is, I don't think Siri does this. Who's that? What do you mean, who's that? That's the person who over there was the thing with the thing. And the, oh, I don't recognize him. You ever do that? Who is that? Especially these complicated shows like Game of Thrones. If they're acting like this is an important person. I don't know who that is. That was 18 episodes ago. I don't remember that person. No, they haven't solved that with Siri yet. So that's the thing I'm not embarrassed to ask for, because I don't think that's unusual. The thing I'm embarrassed to admit I'm looking forward to is you can also say, hey, Siri, skip ahead 2 minutes. And you know why people want that. They want to skip the commercials. Don't you skip my commercials. This is going to be controversial. I think only Apple could pull this off. Remember Replay TV? They basically got put out of business by the television networks because they had commercial skip on the remote. Skip ahead 30 seconds. And the network sued them, and boom, they're gone. I don't think anybody's going to put Apple out of business. But I'm surprised that Apple's doing this. I thought that was, first ad blockers in the iPhone, and now that? Not making any friends. Not making any friends. The TiVo Bold, apparently, which is new, has that as well. It's maybe the networks are weakening a little bit. I don't know. 8888 Ask Leo. Right now, I'm sorry, not Bold, Bolt. Thank you. Bolt. Thanks to Mike B. in our chat room, who's my TiVo guru. He apparently buys every kind of TiVo there is. I have one, the Romeo Pro, which I love. Love it. But as far as I know, I don't think I can do any. What did he just say? So I'll be interested on that. This all started talking about the Roku, the new Roku, which is a little more expensive. Nice. But if you don't have a 4K TV and if voice search doesn't float your boat, then I would just get the less expensive Roku 3. Because in every other respect, it's pretty much the same. I'm a Roku fanatic. Love the Roku. Love the Roku. All right. Don't skip these commercials that are coming up, please. I beg of you. But do hang in there. We're going back to the phones. 8888 Ask Leo is the phone number. 888-827-5536. And I did mention that we have a website. I should really drill that into you because that's all you have to remember. You don't need to remember the phone number, anything I talk about, any links. As long as you remember Tech Guy Labs, we put it all up there. And it's free and there's no sign up. Just it's all there for your delectation. TechGuyLabs.com. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. More calls right after this. What did he just say? Well, the new Apple TV may have a little bit more than that. We shall see. You're right. Skip ahead 2 minutes doesn't mean anything if you're watching iTunes movies, but... All right. Hey, before we get back to work, I want to welcome a new sponsor to the show, Slack. What a great name for a great product. Cut me some slack, man. Slack is a messaging app for Teams. You know, what's really interesting to me is it's not just Teams. People are using Slack with their friends. It's such a great messaging app. I mean, it's really written for business. And we use it, for instance, with our web design team. And what's great is instead of email, which really is a terrible way to stay in touch with a team that's distributed. With a web design team, they're all over the country. They work at all different hours. And it's really great because we are on Slack. You could see everything that's been talked about. You can go back in time. It integrates with all the tools you use, like 100 integrations, including Dropbox and GitHub and Trello and MailChimp and Google Drive and Hangouts. The apps are everywhere, iOS, Android, Mac, Windows. And, of course, there's a web-based chat as well. Slack is incredible. And you see on the website, NASA uses Slack. MIT uses Slack. The Wall Street Journal, Salesforce, Zappos, eBay, Dow Jones, Airbnb, Expedia. I mean, I can go on and on. Everybody uses Slack. We use Slack. I love it. When Slack surveyed their customers recently, they reported 32% productivity increase. And I'll agree that, you know, that is absolutely the case. Unless you put the Slack GIF engine, the GIF bot on there, and then you got trouble. If I type "that's nice," and then Borat shows up, but otherwise productivity is vastly increased. 48% reduction in email, internal email, and that's huge. This is our Slack. I don't think there's anything in here private. We also have a Slack bot. The bots in here are great. 25% fewer meetings. Hallelujah. And if you want to play Jeopardy, there's a Trebek bot, too. Slack is amazing. Slack's a platform. That's what it is. We have a $100 credit you can use when you convert your account from the free plan, which is great, to a paid plan. But you have to sign up for the free plan at slack.com/techguy. Then when you convert, $100. Slack.com/techguy. If your team is not on Slack, you're missing a great tool, wonderful tool, tool we love. And we welcome them to the Tech Guy Show. Slack.com/techguy. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy, 8888 Ask Leo. We're talking high tech. Back to the phones. Clyde from Torrance, California. Hi, Clyde.
Hi, yeah. What do you know about iCloud getting on Windows 10?
So there are some compatibility issues, but iCloud does. Apple does make an iCloud for Windows 10. I wouldn't really recommend using it unless you have Apples, right? Otherwise,
yeah,
there's no point.
Newton's apples fell on our head in the last 2 months. We got iPhones and an iPad.
All right. So iCloud is Apple's cloud solution. You can use iCloud for Windows, which is a download on Windows 10. You'll share documents. You can share photos. The bookmarks on Safari can be shared to your PC. It's really, you know, calendars and contacts can go into Outlook and that kind of thing. I am not a huge fan of iCloud in general. I don't think Apple is the king of internet services. You, of course, are going to use iCloud when you have a Mac or iOS because that's just how you do backups and so forth. But if you want to share data, share files, there are other solutions. Microsoft's OneDrive is available for iOS and Mac, for instance. Google Drive is available for iOS and Mac. Everybody else, all the other cloud service providers, do make Mac and iOS clients. So you really get to pick whatever you want. A lot of people use Dropbox. That's a great choice for sharing files. And so that'll work on everything. But, you know, to be fair, Apple apparently is using Microsoft's Azure as their back end for iCloud. So it is, in fact, running on Windows back at the server. So there you go. So I'll put a link in the show notes to the iCloud app for Windows. You can install it, and it might work fine for you. And it's true, if you've already got iCloud set up, why not? I pay for 200 gigabytes of iCloud storage for backup purposes. I do turn on Apple's Photos app. I really like the photo sharing. And so it would be nice to be able to get those photos on Windows. In order to do that, of course, photo sharing on the Mac and the iOS uses Apple's Photos app. There isn't a Photos app on Windows. So what happens when you use iCloud on Windows is a folder called Photos is created. Actually, I think it might be called iCloud Photos. And then photos are automatically downloaded to that. If you use a Photos app like Picasa on Windows or Lightroom or something else, you could point it to that folder. But there isn't an equivalent for the Photos app. Apple doesn't make a Photos app. File sharing is there. Remember, Apple doesn't make iWork for Windows, so if you want to open a Pages document, you'll probably use the web-based version of iWork on iCloud.com. So there, you know, there are limitations, but you can do it. And I'm going to put a link in the show notes to Apple's support document. It's HT201391 that explains how to set it up and what it can do. I have heard people having problems with Windows 10 and iCloud. You know what? I better set it up and then I'll be better able to answer questions like this in the future. But go ahead and use it. If you've already invested in it on the Mac side, why not? Dave in La Mesa, California, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Dave.
Hey, how you doing, Leo?
I'm great. How are you?
Good. I've started buying a new phone, and my daughter's got Apple iPhone. I've always had Samsung Galaxies, and I'm debating on maybe making a switch. We have Sprint, so I've got the iPhone Forever plan. And
right.
They're about the same cost to lease the phone between the Galaxy 6 and the iPhone 6S. But is there any, if I'm always been a Galaxy user, am I going to have an issue going to, is there anything I'm going to miss or lose by going to iPhone?
Oh, yeah, lots. So you're using Android and in a particular version of Android, the Samsung version of Android, which has, you know, there's stuff Apple does that doesn't work on Android and vice versa. As with most operating systems, there's more in common than apart. Both now, I really like the S6. I think the S6 has a better screen. It's certainly a higher res screen. I think a better screen than the iPhone 6S. It's the colors are more vivid. The resolution is higher. Google Now, if you use Google Now, is available on iPhone, but you have to enter the Google app to do it. Siri, which is the iPhone voice recognition, I don't think is as good as Google's voice recognition on Android. I found a lot of people who use Android frustrated by moving to Siri. On the other hand, iPhone users will say, and with some merit, but applications are better designed on the iPhone, and there's more thought goes into the platform. And I'll tell you, the big, really big difference probably between the iPhone and any Android device is security. Apple has designed the iPhone from the ground up with security, which, by the way, means there are things you can't do on the iPhone that you're used to doing on Android. But in general, it's a much more secure platform than Android. Part of the reason is Apple can force updates. And Samsung even can't force updates. When you want to update an Android phone, the update comes from Google. For instance, we still aren't on Android 6, even though Google has pushed it out for its phones. But comes from Google, goes to the manufacturer, and then Samsung says, well, yeah, we've modified Android, so we have to modify it again and make sure it all works. Once they've tested it, and that takes time, then they get it to the carrier, Sprint, and Sprint has to go through the same process, and then finally, maybe you'll get an update. Apple just updates it from Apple. So we just got iOS 9.1, for instance, from Apple, and pretty much everybody who has an iPhone updated immediately. That's just kind of the nature of the beast, and that means it's a little bit of a more secure platform. Apple also locks it down in ways. For instance, you can't get a Wi-Fi diagnostic tool on an iPhone because Apple doesn't let third-party applications have access to the Wi-Fi radio and the information coming from it. So, you know, when I want to test my Wi-Fi, I'll use an Android device because I can't really test it with an iPhone. So there's lots of little things like that. But essentially, really, if you look at it, if an alien came from space and looked at Android and iOS, they'd say, well, that's exactly the same. It's a big slab of glass, multi-touch, icons. The apps are pretty much the same. The apps I use on both phones are very similar. What's the difference? And we'd have to talk about these very small differences. If you like Google and you like Android, I don't think you'd be disappointed by a Galaxy S6. Oh, there is one big difference, and it only comes when you get the big iPhone. The iPhone 6S and the Galaxy S6 battery life are similar, but if you get the 6S Plus, this is the phone with the single best battery life of any phone on the market, any modern phone on the market. I get a day and a half to 2 days on the iPhone 6S Plus. And if that's an important thing, some people say, I don't mind. I'll charge it up at dinner or at work. But if that's an important thing to you, there's nothing better than the battery life. But you have to get the big one. The iPhone 6S is about the same as the Galaxy S6. Camera, I think the Galaxy might have a slightly better camera. They're pretty close there, too. So it's really a matter of taste. I actually think the S6 might be a little bit of a better phone. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, he's been everywhere, man. He is Johnny Jett, our travel guru, who shows us how to use technology to make travel better. Hello, Johnny Jett.
Hello, Leo.
You fooled me, because what we do, we play a little game. Johnny says, well, where do you think I am? He's never home. And so I said, I don't know. He said, well, look out the window. And I still couldn't tell until the Gateway Arch showed up, and they said, "Oh, I've seen that. That's St. Louis. What are you doing in St. Louis?"
It's amazing view. I'm here at the Four Seasons. Oh. I'm going to go to the
Stay in the nicest hotels in the world. I am so jealous. Love the Four Seasons.
I'm very fortunate.
I think that probably is my favorite hotel, the Four Seasons.
They're really amazing. Last week I called it from the Ritz-Carlton Tokyo.
I know. So love the Ritz-Carlton, too.
You can't go wrong.
So what are you doing in St. Louis?
So I'm going to a football game, and I'm on my way to go see my dad, so it's like a good little meeting point.
You stopped in the middle, the gateway to the West.
Stop in the middle. Yep, but I got a good website for people who are looking to travel somewhere.
All right.
And, you know, a lot of times I hear people say, you know, they have money, they just don't know where to go, they just want to find the cheapest deals or things like that. So there's a new website out. It's called skypicker.com, SKYPICKER.com. Mm-hmm. And actually, they're really just using Google Flights. I just like their name better than
Google does it now because they bought flights. Yeah, they bought ITA, and so you could just Google a flight. You don't even have to go to their flight page and you
I
get
actually
that information. For
Google Flights are amazing. But, you know, this is also kind of like kayak.com's explore page.
Ah.
So what you do is you just put in whatever city you're leaving from, if you're home, it'll pick up your ISP. It'll know where you're going from. And you can put in the dates.
San Francisco.
It will put in the dates, you can put in.
I like they have an anywhere. I'm going anywhere, man, and I'm going tomorrow.
That's what I like.
Yeah, and I'm not returning. Okay, that was a good search I just set up. Now what do I get here? $31 to Vegas?
Right now, there's some really good deals. Especially, what did you put in for the month?
Tomorrow.
Any time?
Tomorrow.
Okay.
I can go to Vegas $31? For $31. Phoenix for $31. $64 to Denver. Actually, I'm going to see my son next week in Denver.
And what airline was that? That was probably like Spirit or something.
I'm going Southwest. Yeah, I won't fly Spirit. Delta. Frontier, wow. It's a one-way. I mean, it's a nonstop. That's pretty good.
Wow. Speaking of those fares, American just announced this week that they're going to start matching next year all these low-fare carriers. Spirit is taking some money, but they're going to unbundle. So they're going to start charging people. You know, they're going to offer the lowest base fare, and then you're going to have to pay for everything from seat assignment to getting on the plane early, to getting your miles, I'm sure. So they're gonna add a whole nother fare class. So you can have like a really low fare, but then you're gonna have to have all kinds of add-ons. Carry on, they're gonna charge for, I assume. You know, of course, baggage.
Frontier's so that's okay, right? That's an all right airline, right?
No. I mean, it's okay.
It's one of those low cost guys.
Yeah, if you're not checking a bag, it's fine. But if you're checking a bag or even carrying out a bag, they charge.
The thing, right? Yeah.
That's what I just don't like about a lot of these low-fare carriers, because people don't realize. They say, I'm going to these guys because it's $30 instead of spending $90. But it ends up costing you more, you know, if you want to get, you know, bring a bag on the plane, check a bag, also have a seat assignment or get a meal, whatever.
A seat assignment costs you more money? That's pretty funny. Wow.
They charge for all that.
Wow.
And they're really, you know, they're going after Norwegian. Norwegian is, you know, they're offering these incredible fares, especially from the Bay Area to Scandinavia. You can go for, you know, $300, $350 round trip sometimes.
So if the price is more important than your knees, you can find a really good price on these.
For sure.
Skypicker.com.
But I also, you know, also you want to double check Google Flights and Kayak's Explore page.
Oh, I like that. It's fun to dream anyway, right? Even if you don't go, it's fun to dream.
Well, that's for sure. All right, I got an app for you. So I know you like food and you like to cook and you like to eat out.
Yeah.
So this one's called Eat With, and I just tweeted it since there's a link, the bottom link that I tweeted to you. I put it in San Francisco.
This idea.
150 cities around the world, from Amsterdam to, you know, San Francisco.
And so you're eating in a chef's house.
Yes. But you could be the chef too. So you could, you know, you could sign up to be a chef and then, you know, put together a meal and then set the price and invite people over, and especially people who are traveling. And they get a good way to, you know, get a local experience. Or you can do it while you're traveling.
Awesome. Wow. And you pay them, right? I mean, they're doing this.
Oh, yeah. You know, they're making money.
Yeah, yeah. But this is like their job. Like, they're a chef, and they want to invite people into the house and cook for them.
I don't know how vetted the chefs are, because
anybody could say, I'm a chef.
Right.
And then you get hot dogs and home fries.
Right. But there will be ratings and things like that. So, you know, you could see user reviews. So you have a good idea who's legit and who you want to go to. But in San Francisco alone, they have 108 dinners right now available.
Well, you know, there's a lot of good cooks in San Francisco. So this week I could go to a Moroccan table with 11 guests, $48, 7 vegetables. That's in New York City. Here's French macarons and bubbly for $63 at a Parisian pâtisserie. Lisa would like that.
So it's all kinds of food. You can get there's a crab fest for $72. There's Indian. So I think it's just a real.
And you can read reviews of the chef. I mean, you could find out, like, Vanessa is a Michelin trained Italian chef, and she's going to invite you to a fishmonger's crab fest. She's apparently very popular because she's sold out. Look at that.
She doesn't have the fishmonger. She's at the Casa Flores.
The fishmonger's crab feast is Don. He's a professional fishmonger. In Ingleside. That's in your neck of the woods. This looks cool.
No, Ingleside, that's Inglewood. This is all Bay Area.
Oh, this is Bay Area. Okay. Should know that.
I've never even heard of Ingleside, so I don't know where it is.
I was thinking Inglewood, yeah.
It's definitely Bay Area, though.
You're south of Market. And what's great is you read about the chef, and then you're going with other people, too, which is fun. So it's kind of a party.
For sure. And if you're traveling, what better way to get a flavor of the country or the city and the people, the food and the people?
I want to do this. This is awesome. Awesome. All right. So that is that's called Eat With at eatwith.com.
Eat With, yep.
Yep.
Or it's the app. Right now it's free on iOS. They don't have it on Android yet.
Sounds like a great idea. I'd love to do that. Well, John,
I got a quick tip for you.
Okay.
So one of my buddies wrote about on his blog how someone had their phone on one of their flights. And, you know, I see this happen all the time. You know, the phone is not secure. And so when you land or take off, it just goes flying and you see it go all the way down, you know, under the seats and stuff. Well, this one guy, it got jammed underneath the seat and they could not get it out. And he ended up having, you know, they've called the mechanics out. The mechanics couldn't get it. So the guy lost his phone. So always secure your phone, especially on takeoff and landing.
Okay. There's a tip for you.
Yeah.
Reminds me of that movie, Catch Me If You Can. You know, the story of Frank Abagnale, the con artist.
Of course.
They came very close to catching him. I think he was on a plane and he went in the... plane had landed. He went in the the lav in the plane, took the toilet seat off, and somehow got out of the plane through the system, but he was blue. So he was easy to catch. Johnny Jet, flew everywhere. JohnnyJet.com is his website. Sign up for his free travel newsletter. Follow him around the world on Twitter and on Instagram, and he joins us every week with great travel tips. Have fun at the Rams game tomorrow.
Thank you.
Yeah, we'll talk again next week.
You have a great week.
Thank you. You too, John. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. My Sharona, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888. Ask Leo. Back to the phones we go. And Jacob is on the line from Cookeville, Tennessee. Hi, Jacob.
Hey, Leo, how you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
Not too bad.
Do you have good barbecue in Cookeville? Seems like there'd be good barbecue in Cookeville.
Yeah, there is, actually.
Now I'm hungry. What can I do for you?
I was wondering if you have heard of this. It's kind of like an Apple TV or the Roku. The Red Rhino Entertainment. Have you heard anything about this?
I have not. It is a set-top box, I take it. I'm actually looking at the website. It looks about the size of an Apple TV or Roku. It's a little puck. Has an antenna on it, and it's got HDMI out, right? You plug it into your TV directly?
Yeah, I think so.
And what is, you don't have one yet?
Well, I went down to one of these as seen on TV stores, and that's where I seen it, actually.
Yeah.
And they had it, and they're like $400 or
three. Oh, don't do it. $300.
Well,
whoa. That's crazy. So this is based on Android TV, which is a free operating system. This hardware costs them about $35. There are about 100 companies in China making exactly the same hardware with exactly the same capabilities. I don't know why they're charging so much money for it. That's crazy talk.
Well, everything he pulled up, like he could put in movies that was at the theater right now.
Well, that's so it may have access to pirate channels. And, of course, one of the advantages of buying something like this, and it's probably why they can charge so much, is this company doesn't care. They don't care. Roku, Apple, Google, these companies have to be, they can't, just wildly break the law. But Red Rhino, I'm betting, is in China. Nothing I see on the specs list is particularly impressive. I have a similar device that I got, was brought to me from China, $40. So this is, they're overcharging for what you get. But it's interesting that they're making it possible. Oh, it has Kodi on it, which is the XBMC movie player. They've skinned it the Red Rhino movie player, but it's basically the same as Kodi. I think their selling point is that they don't mind copyright violation. So, of course, all of this stuff is out there on the internet. And the movie companies and the TV companies shut it down as quick as they can, but it's very easy to start a new website and put this stuff back up. And what they're pushing, besides the fact that it has pirated stuff, but it also has adult content on it, apparently quite a bit. And that's why they're getting away with charging $299 for $50 worth of hardware. I would not. Unless you say to yourself, well, one of the things they put on there is popcorn time, which is highly illegal. It's, it's pirated movies. You can install it on there because it is Android, remember. I would not get this if I were you. But I will, it feels like it's so expensive for what you get. And, although I don't know where Red Rhino is based, I would guess it's probably not in the United States. Hard for me to recommend it. Very hard for me to recommend it. At that price, $300, crazy. You're not buying anything worth $300, except that they've got this pitch and they're willing to do it, and that's why they're charging so much, because they're going to have to disappear soon. That you can get pirated software on it and porn on it. I don't think that that's a reasonable pitch. I think you'd be better off getting a Roku and sticking with legit services. If you want an Android TV, NVIDIA Shield is an excellent Android TV. That's the one I use. There's less expensive ones as well. Just doesn't make a lot of sense to me. I'll put a review of it. I don't have one of these, but looking at what they're doing. Digital Trends has a review, digitaltrends.com. I'll put a link to that in our show notes that shows you everything it does. This is from August of this year, so it's fairly recent. I think you'd be better off with a Roku, a Amazon Fire TV, and stick with the legit stuff. Because the problem with getting pirated stuff on this thing is who knows how long this company's going to stay in business. And who knows how long it will continue to work? Who knows who you're going to get support from? I wouldn't recommend it. 8888 Ask Leo. Brian in Tonopah. Good to talk to you, Brian, in Nevada. Hey, welcome.
Hey Leo. I'm going on a pretty long cruise, and I need to get a camera.
Oh, boy.
It's going to be around the world cruise.
What? I'm so jealous. How many days are you going to be away?
111.
This is my dream. My dream. Oh, man. And you're going to see all sorts of places. You should bring a good camera.
Oh, my God. I can't believe it, really. It's amazing, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
What cruise line are you going on?
It'll be a Princess.
Oh, you're going to have so much fun. Are Julie and Gopher and Captain Steubing going to be on there, too?
Yeah, I think so. It's called a love boat.
It's a love boat.
Yeah.
Wow, I'm so jealous. This is my dream, but of course I can't be away for 111 days.
That was a problem, but I'm not working anymore, so now it was possible.
This is what I want to do. I don't know if I'll ever get to retire, but that's the problem. It's cost so much, you can't retire.
Exactly.
Oh, you're going to have fun. So you're in heaven right now because there's an infinite choice in digital photography.
Yeah, it's not going to be for another year or so, but, you know, I need to get the camera and get used to it and how to work. So,
hey, good. I'm glad to hear that because a lot of times people buy a camera the day they leave and they don't figure out how to use it till the day they get back.
Yeah. Right.
I was on the last trip I was on, it was in Germany. Lovely older woman. Can you help me? This camera's gone dark. And I had to show her the on-off switch. I mean, you don't want to buy a camera the day you leave. So smart. Get it a few months ahead of time and learn it. Because every camera has its strengths and weaknesses, and you want to play to its strengths, obviously.
Yeah, it'd be too costly to call service, you know?
Yeah. So what's your budget? I guess I should start with that.
That's not the concern. I just want to get the best one for what I'm going to be using it for, and that's going to be, you know, a lot of sightseeing and a lot of different kinds of cameras, you know, a lot of different kinds of pictures.
So this is one of the issues. You can get a point and shoot, and there's some really, really great point and shoots.
I'm thinking I don't really necessarily want to be changing lenses.
Yeah.
And you know, it should be pretty durable. And I think geo-positioning of some sort.
Oh, built-in GPS? Right. Absolutely, yeah.
Built-in GPS?
Yeah. So, I'm starting to get... Now, there's an amazing camera that Sony makes. It's very expensive.
You might say Sony.
Yeah, it's very expensive. But
like Sony, though.
Oh, I love Sony. This is probably... I'm not going to recommend this, but I'm just going to mention it.
No, I'm not going to spend $12,000.
No, it's only $3,000.
Oh, okay.
It's the new RX1 from Sony. It's a point and shoot.
That lens you bought, yeah.
No, don't do what I did. That was dumb. But this is the best point and shoot made. But it is priced like a SLR. I mean, this is an amazing point and shoot. I think Sony's. Sony RX1.
RX1. Okay.
Yeah, and they just came out with a new model, and I think in your time frame you're going to be able to get the new model. But it's really expensive. But this is everything that you know a mirrorless camera should be, I think. I mean, this is a stunning camera, but it's a point and shoot.
The large frame sensor and everything?
It's a full frame sensor.
Yeah.
So you're smart enough, you're good because you've been just doing your studies. So the smaller the sensor, like the sensor in a camera phone, is so tiny that you lose low light performance is terrible. Image quality goes downhill. The bigger the sensor, the better. And a full, what we call a full frame sensor is the same full size frame. As a frame of 35 millimeter film.
Okay.
So that's kind of what most of the digital SLRs have and so forth is full frame sensors. But that's expensive because everything else gets more complicated.
It's costly, but if it's dependable and, you know,
you could also get an RX100, which is about $500, also a Sony. Excellent camera. Is that what you have? Yeah, that's an excellent camera. And
I have a little Canon right now, but it's just basically a point and shoot, you know. It's just like an 8 megapixel.
Yeah.
It's pretty old. It's probably 5, 6.
So that RX1 is 24 megapixels. I mean, I think the RX100 is a good compromise between the two, frankly. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Which one do you have? The Mark III?
Three.
Yeah.
Three.
That's a really nice camera. Yeah, the 4 just came out relatively recently, I think. But so this is a little, you know, this is $700 or $800, but that's a lot less than $3,000. Very compact. What's nice about this, it has a very fast lens, so you get good low light. It's a 1.8 lens, which is really unusual in a point and shoot. Excellent detail because, it's 28 megapixels. It's not a full frame. It's a 1-inch sensor. That's a big sensor for a point and shoot. It's as big as you can get on a point and shoot, except for this RX1. There are a lot of choices out there. Are you still on the line?
Yeah. It's also one-fifth the price of the...
I can't... I mean, I would love to have this camera, but that's too much for a point-and-shoot.
Yeah.
So these Sonys are very good. You said you don't want interchangeable lenses. Here's why interchangeable lenses make sense in a trip like you're doing.
It does.
Okay. When you're in Africa, you want to have a long lens so you can get a picture of the lion. But when you're in the Taj Mahal, you want a wide lens so you can get the whole Taj Mahal.
Right. That's true. Yeah.
Now, one thing about point and shoots, they have zoom, so you can go from wide to telephoto.
Yeah, I just thought about not having to carry so much stuff.
The last trip I was on, I just took one lens and a point in the Sony interchangeable lens camera, but I only brought one lens.
So if it did have just an interchangeable, what lens would you suggest?
Well, I wouldn't get interchangeable lens if you don't want to carry, because you're going to carry a kit. You're going to have a camera bag that's got a lot of stuff. And if you don't want to do that, get the RX. RX 100 is amazing. The RX 100, the Mark III or the new Mark IV, the best point and shoot out there, I would say, except for this RX 1, which is absurdly priced.
Yeah. That sounds great. And, like I said, if something happens, then it wouldn't be so much of a,
Well, that's the other thing. Cameras get lost and stolen. It's not unusual.
Yeah.
The latest one's $1,000, but you can get the older model for less.
Okay.
And I have one. They're very, very good. I don't think you would feel bad. So where do you start from?
L.A., back to L.A.
Nice.
Yeah.
And you're going to go...
out towards Hawaii and out down the South Pacific and around into Australia and then up the coast up into China and...
Nice.
Singapore and all that and into the Middle East.
So jealous. It's nice to have this a year from now because you can think about it, you can plan it, you can really get ready for it.
Absolutely, yeah.
Have a wonderful trip. That's
well,
so
thank
fantastic.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate
My
it.
My pleasure, yeah. I think that RX 100 is a very, very, very good choice.
I'm going to take a look at it as soon as I get off
good.
The call.
Good. All right, take care.
Thank you. Bye.
Our show today brought to you by Gazelle. Gazelle.com. I don't have to tell you about Gazelle, do I? You know about Gazelle. Gazelle is the place to go when you have a old gadget you no longer want and you'd like to buy a new one. GAZELLE.com. And I used to say you go to Gazelle to sell your old gadgets, but now you can buy gently used gadgets, too. It's the place to go to buy and sell smart. Trade in your old device for cash or buy a certified pre-owned one or do both. For trade-ins, let's trade in first, all right? You go to Gazelle.com and you pick your item. They buy iPhones, broken or not, by the way. iPads, broken or not, but they also buy tablets from Amazon, Asus, Google. They'll even buy your Microsoft Surface or your Samsung Note. They'll buy cell phones from many companies, including BlackBerry, HTC, LG, Motorola, Nokia, and Samsung. Most of their business, I think, is in the Apple stuff. But when you go there, get a quote. Let's see. If last year's iPhone 6, I have the T-Mobile Edition 64. Can I get any money for it? It's in good condition. It's 230. What? Okay, now. That quote is locked in for 30 days, right? You got a month to decide. You're not making any commitment at this point. So, in fact, why don't you go back and get some other stuff? I also, as it turns out, have an old iPad Air. Is it first gen? I think it's second generation. Wi-Fi only. It was 64 gigs. I wonder if that's worth it. $215. What? So here's the deal. Pile that gadget list high. When you decide that you've sold enough stuff, you can check out. They'll send you a box. They pay shipping on anything worth more than a buck. And then they'll turn around fast if you forget to wipe your data or if it's broken and you can't wipe your data. They'll take care of that. Don't worry. And they'll send you a check or you can get a PayPal credit if you're in a hurry. Or if you buy a lot of stuff on Amazon, get the Amazon gift card because they'll bump that up 5%. So now you've got cash in your pocket. Maybe it's time to get a new device. If you break your old phone or your kids lose their phone, this is the place. This is the place to get a certified pre-owned gadget. They have a rigorous 30-point inspection to make sure the device is fully functional. They will, including things like scratch screens. Look at that. An iPhone 5, $239. I mean, this is great stuff. They have a variety of conditions, so you can get like new. That's going to cost a little bit more. Or you can get, that's excellent, or good, or fair. Fair means there's scuffs and nicks. It'll look a little used, just like your old phone, but it'll be fully functional. And the price you get is incredible. Time to get your new stuff. Time to get rid of your old stuff. Gazelle, the place to go. G-A-Z-E-L-L-E. By the way, everything you buy at Gazelle, you have a 30-day return. So you don't have to worry about it. If there's any, for any reason, you have something wrong with it, or you don't like it, 30 days to get it back and get your money back. G-A-Z-E-L-L-E. Buy or sell at gazelle.com. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smartwatches. 8888-ASK-LEO is the number, hour three of the Tech Guy program. We were talking about cameras, our last caller going on an around-the-world trip. I'm so jealous. And John Slanina, my studio manager, reminded me that there's a great site that will let you, because there's so many good cameras out there now, and there's so many choices, but there's a site, dpreview.com, for digital photography review, and they have a buying guide that will let you browse their products by features. So one of the things our caller wanted was a GPS camera. And so if you go to their camera feature search, you can say, you know, and it has to have GPS, it has to have this or that. So you can kind of narrow it down. A lot of the cameras that have built-in GPS are not as high quality. You know, everything is a trade-off. When you have the size limitations, you can't put everything in a camera. So a lot of the cameras I've used with GPS are point-and-shoots, like the Olympus Tough series is so good. I like it so much because they're waterproof. You can take them into the pool or the ocean. You just cannot harm them, and they do have GPS built in. So the TG3, and they're inexpensive. They're a couple of $100, 16 megapixels. The Olympus TG3, I actually gave it to my daughter, and I think she's lost it. But this is a good inexpensive camera to have in your kit. People who are serious about photography don't have just one camera. Oh, my goodness, no. They'll have a very fancy DSLR, maybe a point-and-shoot, maybe some specialty cameras. And this is a nice one, about $300. You could throw in your kit. It's waterproof. You can take it in, going swimming with the dolphins, take it with you. It's pretty tough, too. You can get it dusty, drop it. If you're riding a camel in the Kalahari, that's good. It's got a very good zoom. And it has a built-in GPS, which is nice because you want some positioning information on your camera. And the truth is, you don't need to have it in all your cameras. You just need to have it in one camera. Even your camera phone, if you take one picture at each location with your camera phone, it'll have the location information in there, and you can extrapolate it to all the other pictures you took in that same time frame. By the way, important feature to take advantage of in most modern cameras, time zone setting. As you're traveling, you're going to be going through a bunch of time zones. You're going all the way around the world. It's good to have a home time zone setting, and most cameras now have that, plus a local time zone. And you want to make sure you change that when you change the time, because you want those pictures. If you take a picture at lunchtime, you don't want it to say 4 a.m. You want it to say noon. So I find it a lot easier if you have local time on your camera, something to remember. DP Review, they have a buying guide, and you can look from the camera feature search, go to connectivity, and then GPS built in. It'll give you all the ones that just have GPS built in. So, you know, if that's the most important feature, it's worth doing that. The problem is, then you may be sacrificing other things as well. And that's the problem. It's hard to find exactly one camera that does everything. That's why a lot of pros have multiple cameras. Laxman, Fort Defiance, Arizona. Hey, Laxman.
Hey, hello, Leo. How are you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
Hey, I know. I'm fine. You have new screensaver, so any new calls for help in your plan?
Oh, we have calls for help every day on the new screensavers. That's our weekly Saturday variety show that I do right after the radio show on our podcast network. And we do calls for help there. Yeah, so if
you do. Oh,
yeah. So if you want to call that show, you actually email us, the new screensavers at twit.tv, and then we'll pick the email and then call you back.
Oh, great. Okay.
But you're here now with the tech guy. It's the same person, same answer.
Yeah. Here's my question. You know, my Hotmail stopped working on my iPhone 6 after I set up two-factor authentication as you recommended. So I don't know what happened. I'm not receiving email on my Hotmail anymore.
Yeah, I would delete the delete that account on your iPhone 6 and re-add it. And when you re-add it, because you're using two-factor, which I highly recommend, this is the negative on two-factor. The idea of two-factor is, you know, it's not enough just to have a login and password. What if you lose the password or somebody figures it out? Then they can get your email. And once they get your email, by the way, you're in deep trouble because, well, when you go to a site and you forget your password, what do? They email it to you. So if somebody gets your main email, that's a problem. You really want to secure it. So I recommend two-factor authentication. Any site that can do it, but certainly with Microsoft's Mail, Hotmail, or now they call it Outlook.com. Turn on two-factor. And what you'll do is you'll enter your login, your password, and then it will say the first time you log on any device, including your iPhone, okay, now what's the six-digit code from your authenticator? And you have to run a separate program. I recommend Authy, A-U-T-H-Y. It's iPhone, Android, Windows, and Mac. And Authy will remember all your secret codes that set up those second factors. And that's nice because you only enter it once. And so you say, Authy, what's my secret code? And it'll give you a six-digit number. And then you enter that in. And now on that device, you're registered. Now, sometimes that doesn't work. So it depends what mail program you're using. Some mail programs are smart enough to say, oh, yeah, we're going to have to go through Microsoft to authenticate this. They, in effect, pop up what is a little window on a Microsoft website, and then the authentication will work. But it doesn't always work. And so Microsoft, Google, and others offer another way to authenticate, and I think that might be what you need here, Laxman, is their application-specific password. This is kind of an ugly workaround. Still better to use this and have two-factor turned on than not. It's just a little less convenient. Go into your Microsoft account and say you need an application-specific password. And that, what you'll get is a new password that you use one time only, setting up that email. So you'll give it your Microsoft Hotmail login. And instead of your regular Microsoft account password, you'll give it this special password. It'll work, and Microsoft will know, oh, it's you. Because in order for you to get this, you still had to use two-factor. You had to log on to your Microsoft account with your password. You had to use the two-factor. Now you've authenticated yourself with a Microsoft site. Now you're saying, okay, now give me a password I can use with this dumb program. And so you're still using two-factor, but you have to do an extra step. So, and oddly enough, I have to do that with Microsoft Office, on Macintosh at least. Drives me crazy. I'm trying to log into my account. I'm giving it the right password. If it says, no, wrong password. Took me, you know, a few tries, and then I go, oh, I know what's wrong. It wants an application-specific password. So that is the exception. I think that's what's going on here. Delete that account. You won't be deleting any mail because the mail is stored at Hotmail.com. And re-log in using an application-specific password. Always, always, in my opinion, use two-factor if it's available. Twitter, Facebook, Google Mail, Gmail, Hotmail, or Outlook Mail all support second factor. Yes, the first time you log in on any given platform, it's an extra step, but it just makes it so much harder for crooks because even if they have your password, they don't have your authenticator program. And so they can't provide that six-digit number, and they're stymied, and that's huge. It's one of the most important things you can do for security is turn on two-factor. 8888 Ask Leo. Hope that helps, Laxman. I noticed that with a number of Microsoft programs for some reason. You need to have that application-specific password. If you log into your Microsoft account and go to the security settings, you have to look around for it. They don't make it obvious you can find that. We're going to take a break, come back with more. The Giz Whiz coming up in about half an hour. Dick DiBartolo with his Mad Gadget of the Week. Take more of your calls to website. Don't forget, techguylabs.com. That's where all the stuff I talk about is stored for your later research. And there's no fee, no sign-up. TechGuyLabs.com. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
8888, ask Leo.
Let's go to Trinidad. I want to do some whining. Hey, how you doing? Jason on the line from Trinidad and Tobago. How you doing?
Hey, how are you doing, Leo? Nice hearing from you. Thank you for taking my call.
Oh, thank you for calling. We were just thinking, Lisa and I, about going to Carnival in February.
Anytime you're ready, you just come on over.
You guys know how to have a good time.
We certainly do.
We have a friend who's Trinidadian. She said, well, she'll take good care of us.
Yeah. I'll be really happy to see you over
Wouldn't
here.
That be fun? All right, deal.
Yeah. Hey, listen, quick thing before I ask my question.
Sure.
About 50 years ago, when you were on the screensavers on ZDTV, you had a feature called Fridge Picture, and my family was one of the pictures that was up there.
Oh!
Back
oh, that's great!
My infant children are now teenagers, way into their teens, so that's a little
strange. It was a while ago. 1998 to 2004, but I think we got rid of the fridge when we built the new studio, so I think that was like 98, 99, 2000 was early, yeah.
It would have been around 98, 99.
Last century. Oh, that's so great. Yeah, we put people up on the fridge. That's great. Well, it's nice to talk to you again.
Yeah. All right. My question is about smartphones and FM radio. I bought a Samsung Galaxy S4 a long time ago. I was very surprised that it didn't have the capability of FM radio. And doing a little bit of checking, I realized that a lot of the modern phones, they don't have that feature at all. So I did some research, and I realized that some of them actually do have the capability, but it's not switched on. So I was wondering, is there a reason for that, and is there anything that can be done to put FM radio on those phones?
So that's a feature that is not as in such hot demand in the U.S., but is almost required in other parts of the world. But in the U.S., they don't ever sell it as an FM radio in there. They rarely mention it. And I think that's what you're seeing. The higher-end phones like the Galaxy S6, where they're selling them in the U.S., and I bet you if you're buying them from U.S. companies, that you're not going to see that, and they don't enable them in the software. So
I bought mine on Amazon, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Because for some reason, it's not something Americans want in their phones. I don't know why, but I'm told it's very popular in Asia, in Africa, all over the world. People want FM radios in their phone, and I guess the antenna is provided by the headphones, and I guess it works well. So if it doesn't come in the stock software on your phone, but you know the hardware is available, and that's the key. You got to figure out, is the hardware available? Does it have a built-in FM radio? If it does, then you could put non-stock software on it. Now, I'm only talking about Android devices. iPhones don't have radios in them. And you can't really modify them, so there's no point. But you can almost always modify an Android device by putting CyanogenMod or something else. And you could look specifically in the ROM software to see if it supports the radio that's built into the phone.
Okay, so that means you have to root the device.
You have to root it, put a new bootloader on it, and then put a new ROM on it, which is non-trivial. The more modern the phone, sometimes the harder that is to do. Samsung, for instance, really tries to discourage it. Google, on the Nexus phones, encourages it.
What I really wanted is I ended up getting an S4 Mini. The mini versions of the phones actually do have the FM radio on it.
Yeah, because they're sold very widely outside the U.S., so here's what I would do. The S4 Mini, you go you want to go to the AV, I've now drawn a blank, the developer forum. Somebody's going to tell me in the chat room in a minute what the site is. And then you go there and you search for that model, and not just S4 Mini. You need to have the specific model number, because what Samsung does is they have a Caribbean region, they have a Latin America region, they have a U.S. region, they have different regions, and you have to have the right ROM for that specific model number, whatever it is, N2501 or whatever. It's the XDA-developers forum. XDA, this is the site for people who want to hack their Android phones. XDA-developers. So you'll look up, you know, you can go into the settings about this phone and then find the exact model number. It'll be, usually it's SM for Samsung dash, and then it'll be a specific number. The last letter may indicate Caribbean region. If you bought it on Amazon, it might be a U.S. region. And then you need the to root it, which is usually pretty easy. The S4, it'll be easier because the older the phone, the more likely somebody's figured out how to do it. Yeah, you root it, and then you put on a new bootloader because the Samsung bootloader will not let you modify the firmware. You're basically putting a new operating system on the phone. And then you need to find an operating system that supports FM radio. But I bet you if you go to XDA developers, you'll you could just put a post up and say, which ones work best with FM radio, and they'll tell you.
Yeah.
And by the way, in most cases, your phone's going to get better.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, the ROMs that they offer for the S4 and the S5 are actually better than the S4 and S5 Samsung ROMs. They get rid of the TouchWiz. They improve a lot of features. I think CyanogenMod and others are much better.
All right.
Oh, and look at Lou MM, who is in our chat room. He's a regular on one of our shows. He works at Microsoft. He has already posted a link to the Root Samsung Galaxy S4 Mini forum, the
I-9195. I am in the chat room. I will check the link.
All right. And then there, once you root it, then the sky's the limit. And almost always, there's a ROM that'll support the additional hardware that's not supported. It's just Samsung doesn't turn it on in the U.S. because nobody in the U.S. wants it, I guess. All right. We're going to take a break. Come back with a lot more. Dean is on the line in Denver, Colorado. He's excited about YouTube Music. YouTube Red starts Monday. We'll talk about it. Stay tuned. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Dean in Denver, Colorado. Hello, Dean.
Hey there.
Hey there. Hi there. Ho there.
Hey, help me understand something here. At work, everyone listens to Pandora or iHeart or, you know, all those other companies.
Yeah.
And I look at them and I say, why? I mean, every song in the world is up on YouTube. So, I mean,
isn't it?
My question for you is, if literally almost every song in the world is already on YouTube, why has YouTube not found a way to punch everybody in the face and take over internet music?
They're trying. In fact, your timing for this call is good because Monday, YouTube Red launches. So, you can buy YouTube Music for $10 a month, just like Spotify and everybody else. You will get the YouTube music collection, which is, you know, whatever it is, 30 million songs. You know, it's the same thing as everybody else does. You can listen to any song and you don't own it, but as long as you keep paying them 10 bucks a month, you can listen to it. With that, you also get ad-free music from YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the only reason people don't do what you suggest, my kids do, by the way, that's how I asked my son, would you join me on an Apple Music family plan? He says, why? I don't need to. I watch YouTube. As long as you have a TV set and something connected to YouTube in your living room that's connected to your speakers, you're absolutely right. You could put together a playlist. They give you all these features. There are ads. That's one thing that kind of gets annoying. But Pandora has ads if you don't pay for it. If you pay for Google Music, you get ad-free YouTube. And now you will also get ad-free all YouTube. You'll get YouTube Red. Monday, YouTube launches a subscription plan, 10 bucks a month. And all your YouTube videos, including all those music videos from Vivo, are ad-free. So, it's not clear, but I was told by a Googler that if you already have the YouTube music plan, I mean the Google music plan, you get it too. So 10 bucks a month, basically, no more ads on YouTube, unlimited streaming music from Google. And one of the things Google does that's great is it allows you to upload your music to their collection. So anything. So, for instance, the Google doesn't have Beatles. Nobody has the Beatles because the Beatles have always resisted digital distribution. Only Apple's iTunes sells Beatles music. Nobody streaming has Beatles music. But I have Beatles music, so I upload it, and now it's on my Google Music, and I can see it. In fact, by the way, a lot of the Beatles videos are on YouTube.
Right.
That's, in fact, one way you can get Beatle music. So you're absolutely right. And Google and YouTube have realized this, that that's how a lot of young people especially get their music. They just make YouTube playlists, and they just watch. That's how my son does it. Of course, we've always had a stereo hooked up to the TV, hooked up to the internet via Chromecast or Roku or Apple TV. There are a lot of places. Actually, Apple TV lost YouTube a while back, but all the others have YouTube. And that works great. I agree with you. I agree with you.
I mean, the other obvious thing about YouTube is there, you said 30 million. I'm not sure where that number comes from. There are so many rare pieces of music that you'll never get on any other source.
No, I think I agree with you. I mean, it's a matter of convenience. You're in the car. You're not listening to YouTube.
Well, I am.
Right, because you bring it up on your phone, connect your phone by Bluetooth to your stereo, and now you're listening.
Exactly.
The video's superfluous, but who cares?
Yeah.
So Red is going to be Google's big play for this. And I think it's for $10 a month, it seems like that's the music service to get.
Yeah.
Because not only do you get all the music you want, you get all the YouTube videos, not just music videos, all the YouTube, everything is ad-free. Now, ESPN has started pulling their videos down from YouTube for this reason. And I don't know what I'm going to do, because right now we have all of our content. This show plus all the other tech shows I do during the week are all on YouTube. You go to youtube.com/thetechguy. You can watch any episode. But it has the ads in it, the podcast ads, not the network ads, but because the network asks us to take out the ads that you hear on the radio. But there are a few, only a handful, 3 ads per show that are podcast ads. Those are still in there. And YouTube... It's not clear whether YouTube will yank our shows or not, because we have our own ads not sold by YouTube in the show. And we're just waiting to find out what happens. We don't know. They haven't told us. They have told a lot of people, although I can't find that email that everybody else claims to be getting, that if they don't agree to the new rules, the YouTube Red rules, that their videos will be hidden. And that's why ESPN is pulling it down. The YouTube Red rules are you have to have an ad-free version of your content, that you have to agree that Google can sell a subscription for $10 a month that will include your content, that Google will sell ads. If not, we'll share that part of a small fraction, I'm sure, of that $10 a month with you. Or if people don't buy YouTube Red, the ads that Google will sell ads onto your stuff. You can't have your own ads. You have to use the Google system. And Google takes 45% of that, by the way, and YouTube does. And then the rest you can have. And Google sets the price and everything. It's not a deal that would keep me in business, but some people do quite well on that. So this is all about to change dramatically. And I don't know if people are going to be willing to pay $10 a month for an ad-free YouTube experience.
I don't know. I think that would make the other companies obsolete.
I think so too. I'm with you. And by the way, I subscribe to both Spotify and Google Music. There are some negatives to Google Music. Until they announced their family plan, it was tied to your Google account, so you couldn't very well share it. Like, my wife has to have her own Google Music account. Now they have a family plan, and that makes it a lot easier to do. They also limit the number of devices you can use. I don't know what's going to happen. It's going to be the world is about to change on Monday. I'm glad you asked. And you're right, Dean. Young people know this. Young people don't watch TV. They don't listen to the radio. They have YouTube.
Right.
And if you want to have Lady Gaga on your stereo, just start playing the Lady Gaga stream on YouTube. Every one of her. Is it every song, do you think, Dean? Like every song in the album? Because it's only songs they've made videos for.
I mean, outside of the Beatles,
pretty much everything's there.
You know, classic rock from the 50s to the 90s, and rarely is there a song that I cannot find on YouTube.
I agree. Some of the conveniences, like Pandora puts a station together, you have to do it manually.
Yeah.
Some of the conveniences are missing, but I really think we're about to see. This is a huge power play by YouTube, and it starts Monday. Yeah. So it'd be very interesting to see. On the other hand, how many people will pay $10 not to see ads on YouTube videos? I'm not talking about music, but just in general. Will they pay $10 a month for that? I don't think so.
Well, for listening to music.
But for music, they might.
Yeah.
I don't know. And how is it going to affect people like ESPN? And I think what we're going to do is kind of what Jimmy Fallon does and Ellen DeGeneres do with the Ellen Show. Put highlights up because we can't put ads up. But I don't know. I don't know how it works. They haven't been very clear about this.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Taylor Swift, by the way, is on YouTube. She may not be on Spotify, but she's on YouTube. Lots of Taylor Swift. Isn't she?
Okay.
Yeah.
She never pulled up on Taylor Swift. I'm sorry.
Oh, well, you know. Let me just see if Tay Tay's up there because I'm pretty sure last time I checked, she's like the number one video. Yeah. Her song Wildest Dreams has 142 million views.
Okay.
So, yes, Taylor Swift's on YouTube, whereas she's not on a lot of the other services. I agree with you. I think you nailed it, Dean, and your timing is good because tomorrow everything changes, or Monday, with YouTube Red. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, the Gizwiz, coming up. 300 million views on Style. But the biggest, of course, is Shake It Off. 1.1 billion views on YouTube. And that's why the music industry doesn't mind this. Because I guess they're making money. I don't know. The podcast today is brought to you by the fabulous folks. And I mean fabulous. I have to say, I am so proud of these guys. I've been an Epson fan for years. When you're a photographer, of course, you're going to be using Epson printers for your photo printing. That's how I started using Epson at home for my business printing and at work for my business printing. And I got to say now, man, these new EcoTank printers, Epson has just taken one for the team. This is amazing. These printers don't have cartridges. They have tanks, and they come in the box loaded with 2 years of ink. Take a look at this ET4550. This is an all-in-one. Doesn't use ink cartridges. It has a reliable, innovative, refillable ink tank that holds enough ink for 11,000 pages. That's about 50 cartridge sets. What? And when you run out of ink after 2 years, you just use these low-cost replacement bottles and refill it. This is so cool. It's environmentally friendly, it's economical, and you never run out of ink. And, of course, you're getting these great printers. These are the Precision Core printers I've been talking about. High speed, vivid colors, laser quality black text. Yesterday I was printing a cheat sheet for Emacs, and it was two pages, and I said, just make it do double-sided. Boom, no problem. Two-sided printing. There's a 30-page auto document feeder for the scanner. That is awesome. I've scanned so many contracts and documents in. And they print wirelessly. They use AirPrint. They Google Cloud Print. You can scan to the cloud. I mean, there's so many nice features on these. They're just great printers. For every pocketbook, for every need. You got a big office and you need heavy-duty, high-volume printing. Look at this. The WFR-4640, 20,000 pages. In the tank, in the box. I love them. This is great. This is great. Nobody else is doing this. This is Epson saying customer comes first. This is what you wanted. Now you got it. You'll be swimming in ink. Well, not literally. Epson.com/EcoTank. You won't run out of ink. They had the reason they have this is because they brought out the synchronized swimming team, the U.S. synchronized swimming team from the Olympics, to Times Square for a demo. And then they were taking pictures with people and printing them out on the EcoTank printers. And the guy was telling me, we printed all day at Times Square. I mean, look at all these people. They printed thousands of images and the tank hardly moved. I mean, incredible. Epson.com/EcoTank. Thank you, Epson. Thank you. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. And he's here. He's called the Gizwiz, no need to fear. Joins us every week with gadgets, gizmos,
yes,
doohickeys.
Yes.
Are you doing a Halloween thing next week? Are you going to get in costume or anything?
No. This is my mustache is my costume.
It's a good costume. It's a good costume. I like your costume.
Are you doing something? Are you going to go
That's
somewhere?
Why I'm asking. No, isn't that what happens is you all ask, everybody asks, so are you going to dress up? And
no.
I don't know. Are you going to dress up? I don't know. Are you going to dress up? I don't know what to do. So I don't know.
Wait a minute. Suddenly I'm on both cameras. You see me there and
I put my mustache on for you.
Oh, okay.
I think what I'm going to do.
Yes.
Well, first of all, it's a radio show, so I can be anybody I want. I'm a dinosaur.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Now you're
like
talking
that?
About your career or a costume?
Gosh, that hurt. Did you shot me right there.
No. Levity.
I am a dinosaur. That is true. So, what do you got for us? A gadget?
I have a new gadget. There was an event in the city called Get Geeked.
Ooh,
and
yes.
What was great about Get Geeked was not one Bluetooth speaker, not one cell phone case.
What kind of gadgets are these?
Weird stuff. One of them was not so weird because you'll know the name Pivot Head.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, Pivot Head. Yeah. So Pivot Head makes glasses with a 1080p camera
right
where the lenses join and looks pretty unobtrusive. And there's a mic in there and actually shoots decent video. So they were at the show and they said, where did you – I said, I haven't heard from you guys in 2 years. And they said, well, we're coming out in December with Pivot Power Smart. And Pivot Power Smart's pretty clever. Still the same 1080p camera, shoots 8-megapixel stills. But the back of the lens, the back of the eyeglass frames have little clip-in modules. One of them is that you can clip it in and do live streaming from the glasses through your cell phone. Another one is additional battery power. So if you want to shoot very long videos, you can click in additional batteries, and as they die, just click in another one. And then there's also a way to add an SD card. And these things just clip into the back, and it extends the glass by maybe an inch and a half, but doesn't look bad. So this way you'll be able to live stream, have unlimited video recording, and unlimited power. With these little, they're called smart mods. And so now the original glasses have dropped down from 300 to 169, and the new ones are going to be 300 coming in December.
That's it. That's all you have to say.
That's all.
You don't have a video? Last time you had a video on your boat that made me seasick.
Oh, yeah, no idea. Oh, I have a video of me talking to the guy and the guy live streaming. But that's all at gizwiz.biz. And,
oh, yeah, the website. Love that website.
Yeah.
Last chance, by the way, to play the What the Heck Is It contest.
It is.
End of the month. Is. It's all over. Dick, if you go to gizwiz.biz, Dick has a close-up.
Oh, wait
picture.
A minute. No, what? Next Saturday will be only the 31st.
Yeah, so next, you have a week.
Yes,
to
exactly.
To play this game.
Exactly.
Go to gizwiz.biz, click the What the Heck Is It button, and then identify this close-up picture of a gadget. It's obviously a thumb moistener for people who have to count many bills.
You stick,
stick your finger in the hole there, and it moistens your thumb. That way you don't have to lick it.
You know what? I think that's a Kickstarter project. Let's get that going right away.
Gizwiz thumb moistener. Well, anyway, the point is it doesn't matter if I'm right. There are 12 autographed copies of Mad Magazine for the right answer, but there's 24 for the best wrong answer. So everybody can play this. So gizwiz.biz. And don't forget gizwiz.tv because that's where you will see the fabulous, fabulous Gizwiz podcast.
Yes.
And Dick DiBartolo joins us every week. Thank you, Dickie D.
Yes, sir.
We'll see you next
week. See you later. Okay, bye.
Scott, Corona, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Scott.
Hey, how are you, Leo?
I'm great. How are you?
Good. Hey, I bought a couple of new DVDs, and I've been trying to convert them to watch them on my iPad or my my AirBook, my MacBook. And I bought a couple of apps, downloaded a couple of apps to try to make that happen. And so far, I've been unsuccessful. They're not recognizing the DVDs these new DVDs. So I'm wondering, do you have a recommendation?
Yeah, so all DVDs have copy protection on them. They're Blu-ray? They're not Blu-ray. They're regular DVDs, right?
Yeah, these ones are regular DVDs, not Blu-rays.
Okay. So they have a copy protection scheme that was cracked by a high school student like 20 years ago. That's the good news is there is copy protection on there. But the bad news is you're going to have to defeat it to make a copy. I recommend, and this works just fine for me, a program from France called Handbrake. It's free. Handbrake. It's like a handbrake on your car. .fr. Mm-hmm. And when you download Handbrake, they're going to say, oh, but wait a minute. We cannot crack these discs. For that, you must have something called the VLC player. So you get that, the VLC player from Videolan, VideoLan.org. Also a French company, strangely enough.
And Videoland.org.
Videoland, no D. Videoland.org. So you get the VLC player. That's what you use. You can use that to play back DVDs. You put in a DVD, play it back on Videoland. And the reason this works is because in order for a DVD to be played back, the decryption key has to be loaded into memory. VLC does that, as do all DVD players. And then Handbrake goes, oh, thank you very much, and takes that and decrypts the DVD. You can then put it on your disc. You can play it back. You can. And here's why I'm ethically okay with that. You bought this DVD, right?
Yes, I did.
You own the DVD. You have a right to make an archival copy. What if it gets scratched? You have the right to do this. They discourage you, and the Digital Millennium Copyright Act actually makes it technically an illegality to do what you're going to do.
Oh, wow.
That's why these places are in France, not in Muncie. But as far as I'm concerned, there's no harm, no foul here. You're not going to sell these files, right? You're not going to put them up on BitTorrent sites.
No.
It's just for it's so you can put it on your laptop and don't have to carry 100 DVDs with you.
That's right. And so I did download Handbrake. That was the one that was recommended to me, but I guess I was missing the
VLC
player to make it play.
Yeah. It says it somewhere in the instructions, but who reads instructions?
Now, do you think just a free copy of Handbrake is enough? Or
yeah, it's great. It's everything you need. Okay. See, it's hard for a company to charge for this since it is illegal. There is a company in Trinidad called Slysoft that actually does sell commercial software to do this. It's slysoft.com. But why buy it when you can get it for free? I think, just get the free one.
So why is it okay to buy a CD and Apple has no problem converting that to be able to listen to it electronically versus buying a DVD?
Don't get me started on the sad state of copyright in this country.
Okay.
Hey, thanks for calling. Thanks for listening, too. Thanks to Nathan State and our musical director, Heather Hammond, the phone ranger. I'm Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Have a great geek week. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy Show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, it's just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows on the Netcast Network. It's called TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, Security and Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. You even get your daily dose of tech news with Tech News Today and Tech News Tonight. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guy show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.